Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast with host Ralph Malbro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of The Team Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Which four of you would survive the longest in the zombie apocalypse, and in which order would you die?
Well, Ralph, no offense, you're going first.
Oh, definitely. No.
The zombies would smell Dave's sugar blood and target him.
They'd get his...
I don't even have a joke, Dave smells like nougat.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast. As always, we are sponsored by the Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I hope you were there last night to watch the awesomeness of the Saints or LSU, or you can watch the Astros in the playoff game tomorrow. They should have drink specials or something, but they have 136 draft beers. You're going to need them all. You can just drink one for every time the Astros hit a home run and pound the Yankees into the dirt. So the Pelican House, they are awesome. You go there, it's football season. What else are you going to do in Baton Rouge? You go to Pelican House, you can get your drink on, get your eat on. Come on. The Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They support us, so you should support them.
When was the last time the Saints, LSU, and Tulane won all on the same weekend?
Dude, I don't know. See, that was
not that long ago, I promise.
Yeah. Buddy D used to track that stat all the time because it was so rare back in like 02, 03.
Well, that was probably because the Saints were screwing it up all the time.
Probably. Well, I mean, they
absolutely.
Were...
Well, the Saints and Tulane. Yeah. They were both kind of automatic for a while.
This game last night, the Saints finally get a win. Woo! 1-3.
Woo!
1-3. I'm going to say that was the craziest, wildest, happiest, bat shit ending for a Saints game in history.
In a regular season game,
they have not had a crazier, happier ending. Rip the mess in Jacksonville with the return, and then Carney missing the extra point is crazier.
What about Dempsey?
Ooh, that's good too, because that's the NFL record field goal to win a game. Yeah, because he had a club foot.
I told you to give me 24 hours. It turns out I needed 10 minutes.
10 minutes. It's close. Kenny Stabler getting sacked when they were up one to Dallas, and they ended up losing.
The River City Relay.
Yeah. Last night.
I think the River City Relay has to take it because how often, 80-yard touchdown passes happen every now and then.
Yeah, but he specified happy ending.
Happy ending, yeah.
There was no happy ending.
There was no happy ending. I mean,
well, if you were the Jaguars fan, that was happy.
Yeah, true.
But considering what had happened up to that point where he doinks the field goal and you're like, I mean, I tweeted out, I was like, it's happy. We're going on four. Before I get this bullet to the head, give me a cigarette and a scotch. Like, like I was down in the dumps.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, just the way things have been going for the Saints, I'm with you on that one, Ralph. Obviously, you and I were both at the game. And when he misses that field goal, you have to be thinking, well, that's it. We just totally blew this.
Bad teams find a way.
And the thing that shocked me on the
Snatched
field goal
defeat from the is, jaws of victory
is usually on a field goal. Whenever they kick it, the crowd will react a certain way. You know, like as soon as Garrett Hartley kicked the field goal in the NFC Championship, you knew because the crowd in the behind the field goal is going bonkers because it's right down the middle, and usually they'll groan if it's close. They didn't really do that sort of noise.
Well,
because
they were all looking at the fat shirtless guy.
That is true, fat shirtless guy.
that was amazing.
Pregnant Saints fan, dude.
That was Rob Ryan's like son or something.
I think the thing is when it hit the upright, people weren't sure if it was in or out.
People weren't sure if it bounced off the upright and
went in.
Because, I sit up high, so I knew it bounced back.
I can't tell from where I sit. I have shitty angles, and so I can never tell. Even if it's down the middle, it's hard for me to tell whether it's through the uprights or not.
My mom was all excited. I'm like, they missed. She's like, what? I'm like, they missed it. You didn't see it doink off the thing and the guy for Dallas catch it?
I heard it.
Yeah. You could hear it up from in the
I mean, in hindsight now, obviously, when it happened, I was going nuts. I mean, I was pissed because, you know, it's like midnight at this point here on the East Coast, and I got to go to work tomorrow, and you guys are making me stay up through overtime to watch you fucking bone this game. And I was just getting so angry. And obviously, when they make the play to Spiller, it was almost worth it. Like, I was glad in the end that he missed the field goal, because the ending that we got instead was so much better.
I mean, right.
I thought the game moved fast. You know, Ralph, you make fun of me because I don't normally drink at the games, but last night I was drinking at the game, and I was drinking before the game, so
I was a little heavily.
So I was a little inebriated, and the first half just flew by, and I'm like, I must be really drunk, because that seemed like it was took no time at all.
That was for a Sunday night game.
It was like an hour and 15 minutes for the whole half.
Let's be honest. 0-3 calls for heavy drinking day.
It does. I mean, you gotta drink. I mean, I didn't drink as much as I usually do because I had a 7 a.m. flight today, but I was drinking pretty good. Andrew, here's the thing. I get that the Saints' offensive line is bad, and we'll get to it, all the particulars, in just a second. And I get that they have a lot of issues. But here's the thing I don't understand. Most teams that have a bad offensive line, they might be bad at home, but they're worse on the road because of the crowd noise and that sort of thing. The Saints' offensive line on the road this year has been okay. It's at home that they're so bad. What is the deal? Why are they so crappy at home? I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of it's maybe the opponent, you know, and just the matchups. You know, part of it is Senio Calamete kind of getting acclimated to the NFL, his second start. I thought he really struggled. It's a good question. I don't really know the answer. You would think they'd be dialed in, and from a tempo perspective and just from the ability to quickly get in and out of the huddle and clearly understand the line checks and everything, it's just easier to do at home, like you said. So it's a little surprising.
Dave,
and we're probably going to be seeing more of Senio Calamente because I think we learned today that Jari Evans had arthroscopic knee surgery, so I would say he's probably going to be out for at least a little while.
Dave, is it time to get Zach Strief? Is it time to put him in a home? I feel like it might be.
I don't know. I feel like Junior Gillette he nailed it, man, ever since Zach Strief caught his wife, Raw Dog, and some other dude.
That's the second time you've done that, though. Wife doesn't raw dog a dude.
Dave just likes
her
to say raw dog. He doesn't he doesn't care what context it's in or if he uses it properly. He just wants to drop raw dog.
Unless Zach Strief's ex-wife has some form of anatomy I don't know about.
Oh, my.
You're right, I do. I do apologize. She was getting raw dogged.
Yes.
And Zach walked in on it.
The proper way.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a very good friend who actually knows Zach very well and personally, obviously, and he is, you know, getting married and he's engaged and all that kind of stuff, but none of that should really affect the way you play on the field. So I don't know what's going on.
Andrew, what's the deal with the field? I feel like he looks slow.
Well,
he's 6'8", 360 pounds.
So I mean,
he's always been slow. He's always been slow. And I think if you look at Strief, there's one thing. He's really always struggled with speed rushers. Now, when he's had speed rushers, he's had the luxury of a better line, a healthy Jari Evans, Pierre Thomas, who at the time was one of the best blocking running backs in the NFL, I thought, at least in pass protection. And so I do think in this game in particular, I saw Breeze get hit a couple times where it looks like it's on Strief. They are getting edge pressure, but, you know, Breeze has, you know, this uncanny ability to feel that pressure and step into the pocket. And unfortunately, with Calamete at right guard kind of struggling in pass protection, Breeze didn't have that clean area to step into. And so a couple times you see Strief get beat and his man blow up Breeze. And I think as a fan, your immediate reaction is, oh, Strief sucks, he's done. But I've just seen countless times the exact same scenario in years past where Bree steps into his clean pocket and it's a non-issue. So, you know, as much as you want to blame Streif for some of that stuff, I think it's a combination of just the right side kind of breaking down and falling apart at the seams. And in the second half, it was much better, especially on that last drive. If you look at that last drive right before the missed field goal, the amount of time that Breeze has on those throws was significant, and that's where he was finally able to get downfield and hit Snead and hit Coleman and make big plays.
With the Spiller awesomeness and the missed field goal, Dave, I feel like that drive, it gets kind of forgotten. That drive was awesome by Breeze. He had no timeouts and just ran it to freaking perfection at the end.
No, I mean, the field goal aside, the Saints put together, on their final two drives, they put together two scoring drives when they needed it most. I think out of the last four series, they had like two touchdowns, a missed field goal, and maybe a made field goal or something like that. So, I mean, what we saw from the offense at the end of the game, hopefully that, you know, that's something that carries over into next week and the week after and all that. I think Breeze kind of touched on this in his press conference after the game, his post game presser.
The one that he was dressed down at.
Yeah, yeah.
Casual Sunday.
I actually think that the way the Saints won this game, I think, is actually more beneficial than if they had just gone
and kicked the field goal.
Either kicked that field goal or just won a normal game by, you know, touchdown or two or whatever.
Yeah, I agree.
And you're taking a knee at the end. You know, I think that a game like this, it has way more effect on the psyche and the morale of the team. And, you know, everybody in that locker room has to be pumped about this win. And what I think is,
well, they were almost
there's
in the
something about just being battle tested.
Yeah.
They faced the
abyss.
Facing adversity and overcoming that, you know, that's all awesome stuff, and all that stuff, you know, is big in the locker room, and hopefully they can build off that. And that's why I think it was actually great.
Well, if they'd have lost yesterday, Andrew,
that would have been the exact opposite.
Yeah.
You would have had to pick heads up off the floor and, you know, everybody just would have been totally, I think the life would have just gotten sucked out of this team.
Andrew, this is going to sound like a really insane statement, but I'm going to say it anyway. Is Willie Snead the Saints' best receiver today?
I'm going to say yes. I think so, yeah. I mean, I think you've got to look. Obviously, he's ahead of in the pecking order of Coleman. So I think right now you should clearly say he's in the top three. But if you look at what Colston, you know, the mess that he's been this year, and if you look at kind of the inconsistent play of Brandon Cooks, I mean, I thought that game was one of Brandon Cooks' worst as a Saint. I mean, he had two drops. He had a drop early on a sideline throw, and then he had a drop on that final drive where, you know, he kind of runs a slant and doesn't come up with it. So something about the chemistry with him and Breeze, they just don't have the timing down. I'm not really feeling it between those two. And what I'm seeing from a lot of defenses is they're putting their biggest corner on him and playing him in bump, and he's struggling. I mean, Patrick Peterson, Mo Claiborne, we've now seen two corners.
And Mo Claiborne kind of, is a mess for
yeah,
Dallas.
Yeah, we've seen them kind of rough up Cooks and kind of shut him down. And so, you know, I've heard Brian, you know, say that he's being misused, obviously, and based on, you know, his skill set and what he did at Oregon State. And there's definitely some truth to that. But I think at the end of the day, look, if you're a number one receiver, if you're a stud star receiver, it doesn't matter what the play call is. You go out there and you execute it and you make plays, because that's what playmakers do. And he's not really doing that. And so, you know, I think when you have a Jimmy Graham as your number one, or you have an A.J. Green, or you have a receiver like Odell Beckham, Cooks as a complement to that is an absolutely deadly weapon. But as someone that carries your offense, he just doesn't have the size. He doesn't have the consistency. You don't have a way to maybe get the ball to him very easily where he can get, you know, 8 to 12 to 15 catches in a game. And so I just think watching him play right now, I think the Saints need someone that's a little bit steadier. And you look at Snead, guy with pretty sure hands, runs really good routes. And I think the most exciting thing for me about him is just his toughness after the catch. You know, he reminds me a lot of Willie Jackson.
That's a good comparison. He's not quite as tall, I don't think. Yeah.
Not quite as tall, but Willie Jackson was just one of those guys where he wasn't the fastest, but he was just this tough-as-nails receiver, you know, kind of like a Jarvis Landry, but less explosive, with great hands, good routes, and just tough after the catch. And Willie Snead has this very similar game.
Yeah.
Did you guys see my tweet this morning? You know who has the most receptions so far?
Yeah, your boyfriend, Mark Ingram. Dave, that's a good segue, because here's my thing.
He's getting the ball way too much.
And I texted Andrew this.
Is that a problem? I mean, I think he's getting the job done, though, isn't he?
Well, here's my question. I texted this to Andrew not right before Spiller scored the touchdown, but like in the middle of the third quarter. And I won't repeat the text verbatim because it had a lot of cursing in it. But the point of it was, when are they going to get Spiller the ball more? And here's the thing, Dave. They need to get Spiller the ball more than seven times a game. So of the running backs, if they're going to give Spiller 12 touches, 13 touches, what running back should have their touches reduced? Kyrie or Ingram?
I mean, that's the problem. And you know what? I was okay with Spiller not being in the lineup and being injured, because I got to be honest with you, I think we've seen it before, but I think there is the possibility that there's too many cooks in the kitchen, and I mean that's the problem. You know, it was sort of an issue when there was Pierre Thomas and Reggie Bush and Deuce McAllister and all that kind of stuff. It's like there's only a certain amount of touches to go around. This is a zero sum game here, and you know, Mark Ingram has been doing well, and again, Mark Ingram is the kind of guy who needs a bunch of touches if as far as carries are concerned. You know, he you can't just give him 5-6 handoffs in a game and expect him to produce on those 5 or 6. And so with CJ Spiller coming in now, I have to admit, I'm just slightly concerned that it's gonna sort of screw up the mix and the mojo a little bit.
But there isn't much mojo. I mean, this week was the first time they broke 20, and it took overtime to get them there. So I mean,
you're right.
I just feel like, Andrew, that like Spiller is their most explosive weapon they have.
Yep.
And they got to get him the ball, and somebody's got to get less touches or carries. I don't care who it is, but Spiller.
Well, I think it's forgivable because Spiller's coming back from that injury, and we know he was on a pitch count at first, and we, you know, gradually. But now in this game against Dallas, you clearly see that he's got the speed. He's ready to become more of a focal point in the offense.
Andrew hit the call.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Right.
Yeah.
But
I'm starting to lose my voice.
But who?
I hear that. Well, you weren't even at the game last night.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what they need to do is, obviously Spiller is going to play every game as long as he's healthy and he's going to be involved. I mean, I think what you need to do is you pick one running, you know, between Kyrie and Ingram, you pick one on any given Sunday and you kind of say, "Hey, look, you know, this is going to be
We talked about that before. I mean, there is a hot hand element that you have to observe.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, there was definitely one game here where Kyrie should have gotten way more touches than Ingram.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a tough situation because you look at – it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't, because, you know, Sean Payton always says you can never have enough running backs and you can never have enough corners. And that's a factual statement until you go through a lucky year where there's not a lot of injuries, and then you don't have enough to spread the love around. And so, you know, it's tough because right now I feel like the Saints are in a position where, you know, maybe Ingram's getting too much and Kyrie and Spiller are maybe not getting enough. But if one of these guys goes down, then obviously you're going to be glad you had that depth. You look at Philadelphia. I mean, they've got Ryan Matthews, Sproles, and DeMarco Murray, and DeMarco Murray just ran his mouth in the media this week because he feels like he's not getting enough touches. So it's tough, man. Do you have one running back like Marshawn Lynch, but then he's hurt and he's out tonight, and then how much does that hurt your team when your star running back is missing if you don't have good depth?
Yeah, it's well, the thing that concern, I mean, it wasn't so much of a concern of the carries and all that to me when the Saints were averaging 29 a game. But now they're not, and the, you know, when they were averaging 29 a game, they had Graham, they had all these other explosive weapons. I feel like they really they don't have a lot of weapons, and they like even if they don't necessarily get him the ball, like just having Spiller on the field can help them. But we'll see yeah. going.
I mean, I think right now Ingram needs to have his carry, his number of touches. I mean, he's a workhorse, and you know he's been solid. I thought in that game he played pretty well, but he's not the most explosive. But Spiller has that element, that game-breaking ability. Mark Ingram is not a guy where, as a defense, you scheme and you say, okay, where is this guy on the field? We have to pay attention to that guy. Spiller absolutely has it. So just him being on the field is going to be able to help create. Now if teams are going to watch tape, they're going to see that play in this Dallas game, and they're going to have to start accounting for him. And that's going to open up things for guys like Brandon Cooks, who we just talked about. And so that's why he's so important to this offense.
Dave, on the defense, I thought they played pretty good. The first two runs skew it a bit on the yards, and the penalty flags were raining down. But here's the thing: do you think the penalty flags, is it a case of the NFL is just penalty insane this year? They've called more penalties through 4 weeks than they ever had in the history of the league. Are the Saints just caught up in that, the penalty hurricane, or is it a combination of their pass rush sucks and their defensive backs just can't cover for that long and they grab out of desperation?
Right. Or are the Saints responsible for breaking the NFL record for most penalties in the first four games of season? I think calls are up around the league, and it's been a record. Breaking year, so I mean, I think that's obviously part of it. Brandon Brown is a physical cornerback. We knew that going in. He was part of Seattle. He was part of Seattle's Legion of Boom or whatever, and those guys always played physical, and they took a lot of penalties, I believe, the year they won the Super Bowl. So that's kind of his style. None of this is actually surprising to me. This is kind of what I expected. And Delvin Bro, I mean, he's a big guy, and he seems to be learning a few things from Brandon Brown.
Andrew, I mean, I feel like a big part of it is that the pass rush is horrible.
I mean, it doesn't help.
Well, that's
of course
part
it doesn't
of it.
Help.
But it doesn't help, but I mean, first of all, the illegal hands to the face. I mean, there's no excuse for that. You know, that's not pass rush. That's not. I mean, that's literally jamming a guy at the line of scrimmage and hitting him in the face as opposed to the shoulder pads or whatever. So, I mean, that's pretty easy to clean up. But I think, you know, with...
Not turning your head and looking at the football.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the pass rush either.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think if you look at the way the Saints schemed this Dallas game, I mean, they were definitely daring Brandon Whedon to throw it over the
top.
He couldn't do it consistently. And so what they did was... You know, they kept their corners near the line of scrimmage. They were playing jam coverage. I mean, most of the game, if you watch it, the corners were 1-2 yards off the line of scrimmage, right in the receiver's face, close to the line of scrimmage and run support. And it helped the Saints stop the run for the most part. I mean, you take away those first two runs of the game, and I think Dallas averaged 2.1 or 2.2 yards per carry. So obviously the Saints coming in said, hey, we're going to jam everyone up at the line. We're going to get a bunch of guys in the box, and we're going to stop the run. And we're going to dare Brandon Whedon to throw the ball down the field and beat us in man coverage when we're jamming. And because they didn't have Dez Bryant, that was a terrific game plan. It worked.
Well,
you know, obviously the penalties, you're going to have more of those when you play that style of defense because you're in man-to-man, you're in jam coverage, you're immediately getting physical right at the snap because it's handsy right from the get-go. And then it's just a matter of how the refs are calling it.
You know what? Saints fans aren't even allowed to get upset by any of that because consider the alternative that we had a couple of years ago when everybody was bitching and moaning about our cornerbacks giving 10 freaking yard cushions at the line.
That is true.
And not even being in the vicinity to even be called for a pass interference because you're 10 yards away from the guy when he makes a goddamn catch. So honestly, this is way better. I'll take this.
God.
Yeah, the only thing that's frustrating now is – You know, the last pick six that the Saints had, I researched this today, was Jonathan Vilma in the final game of 2012.
Yeah.
Their last interception, it was in the final game of 2014. The Saints have zero picks through four games. They're one of three NFL teams with no interceptions. I mean, at some point, we've got to make a play in the backfield.
You would think that the Saints won, and that's great, and it bumped Akeem Hicks getting traded to like 30 minutes into the podcast. So Andrew, here's my question though: did they trade him because he was terrible and they weren't going to get anything out of him, or did they trade him because they were like, look, Bobby Richardson might be pretty good and we want to play him more, and it's going to be okay?
Well, I think Richardson, based on the way he's been playing, and definitely this was his best game. So I think, you know, getting the vote of confidence from the coaching staff that, hey, we just shipped out your main competition for playing time, and you're the starter now. You go out there and get it done. And obviously he responded, and he had a great game. I was so impressed with his performance. I mean, he really, really played an incredible game and run support. But, yeah, I think – you know, I think that was part of it. I think the Saints really like Richardson, and I think they feel like he's the starter right now. He's been playing better than Akeem Hicks. He deserves to be the starter. I don't think it's that Akeem Hicks isn't good. I think we know he's good. We've seen him play well. We've seen flashes, but obviously he's kind of fallen off. We talked about this last week about how he was Cedric Ellison. But for me, the thing with Hicks is that for whatever reason he's fallen off. We know that he had a little bit of an issue with it. He told the media he was benched. He wasn't happy about it. He said he was coming to talk to Sean Payton. So already you feel like maybe he's got a little bit of an attitude issue. He's in a contract year. So, you know, if he's being benched, then that bridge is being burned. And you know the Saints aren't coming or bringing him back. You know that he doesn't want to come back if he's getting benched. And so I just felt like he was leaving anyway. And so if that's the case and you've got a guy that can come in and replace him that you feel pretty good about, then, you know, you trade him for an immediate need, which is a backup tight end. The Saints had no depth at tight end. You know, at least they get something out of him.
Yeah. Dave.
But someone tweeted that the difference, you know, basically the Huminem and Aoi.
What?
Is that right?
Yeah. And what?
But,
I'm not even going there.
Someone said that the trade was skewed hugely from a talent perspective in favor of the Patriots, and I agree with that. I think Hicks, from a ceiling perspective, is a much, much better player, but he's not a much, much better player right now. In fact, he's kind of been garbage for the Saints. So
the Patriots will be able to get it out of
him. And a backup tight end.
They probably
will, but the point is, right now, for this Saints team this year, and next year, Hicks isn't coming back. So for this Saints team this year, that backup tight end that's a decent blocker is probably helping them more than Hicks was.
Right, exactly.
Dave, who's going to be kicking and punting for the Saints on Sunday?
I think Josh Scobie's available.
Oh, my God. Jesus, man.
Hawker's not going anywhere.
Yeah, no, I mean, Hawker's fine for place kicking. You know, he's
one
young.
Week.
He's young. At least he hit the upright. I mean, he didn't totally miss.
I mean, if it squeezes in, I mean, if that ball bounces in, he's really solid because he had a really good game. But now he's kind of like.
I think he's still like 7-for-9 for the season. I don't think he's like he's not terrible. He's really not, and I think you got to give him a chance and stick with him. So as far as kicking is concerned,
he did hit a 51-yarder, nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know he's pretty decent. He's definitely got a leg on him. You know that's good. But you know the bigger issue is Morstead, who did not finish the game last night. And he always stands in front of me on the sidelines when he's on the bench, and you know he was talking to trainers and pointing to his kicking leg and his upper, you know, his thigh area, and then at one point then they went over and talked to Peyton, and I guess they were telling Peyton that he might not be available or ready to go, and but you know, I was most concerned when all of a sudden you see Hocker taking practice punts into the kicking net, which is a totally odd sight because I always see Morstead and only Morstead for the last, what, 4, 5, 6 years. And I said, oh, shit, if Hocker is practicing punts, that means he's definitely going to be going in there, or at least he may be going in. And then it just became evident that Morstead was definitely not coming back because he was walking around with ice, and he kept walking around. He would not stand still. He would not sit still. But he spent about 10 minutes with an ice pack in his leg under his padding, and he's walking around and he's just holding it there on his right leg for 10 minutes, just walking around and holding it and propping it up. So, you know, there's got to be some concern about what his deal is. If he's got a strained quad or what's going on, if he's going to be able to kick, is where they going to do a punter? That's the concern.
We're going to have like a 50-year-old punter come in, Andrew.
I don't know.
I think they're going to have to carry two. Yeah, I mean, Hocker, I saw this on Twitter. I didn't know this, but apparently Hocker was an all-state punter as well. He kicked and punted for his high school team, and you know, he had a 65-yard punt or something in high school. So at least he had some experience with it. And obviously the punt that he had was terrific.
Would they, Andrew,
might have just got Wally pipped.
Well, no, not that, but Andrew, would the Saints sort of, and I want to say a team did this a long time ago, but basically the punter got injured and the kicker could punt too, like Hawker could. And when the team had tryouts for punters on Tuesday, they just told the kicker, hey, you go in the punter tryouts too, and if you beat the three guys we bring in, you'll get
an extra roster spot.
You'll do both until the other punter gets back. Would the Saints do
possible,
that?
It's possible, but I just don't think they, especially with a rookie like that that doesn't have experience, and they don't want his leg to tire out, especially now he doesn't typically do kickoffs. That's usually Morstead's role, and now Hawker's going to have to do kickoffs too. So I don't think that'll happen. I think they'll sign another punter. And unfortunately, what that means is probably, at least for this week, if Morstead isn't ready to go, they'll have to carry two punters on the roster. So that means, you know, Joe Morgan or, who else would be – or Wilson, the cornerback, Kyle Wilson. I mean, those are guys right now that are probably in jeopardy of losing a roster spot if they have to bring a second punter in. And unfortunately, they may have to carry that until Morstead can get healthy. Now, if you're the Saints, the good news is Hocker can kick off, and depending on how serious Morstead's injury is, you know, the Saints may decide we don't want to carry two punters on the roster, and so if he's out 3 or 4 weeks, the Saints may shut him down for the year. So that would be the real bummer is, you know, if Morstead's going to miss 3 or 4 weeks and the Saints don't want to wait, and so they just stash him on IR.
Dave, I'll start with you. We're 4 weeks in with this rookie class. How are you feeling about it?
I think it's gone about as good as you could expect. After the draft, the first thing we said is, okay, I mean, Mickey and Sean pretty much mortgaged the future on this draft. They really had to hit in this draft and get at least a few starting quality contributors on this team. Otherwise, all those moves they made to acquire all those draft picks, all of it would have been for naught. So, you know, I mean, Stephon Anthony, he had an okay game yesterday, but I mean, throughout the season, he's been tasked with a big role. He's been tasked to lead this defense in his rookie year at middle linebacker, and I think so far he's doing fine. Kikaha has 3 sacks this season. He's your team leader. He's not even a first-round pick. I think probably the biggest disappointment, Damian Swan. Did we draft him or was he? He was a.
He was drafted.
Fifth round pick.
Okay, I was gonna say sixth. I mean, he's been definitely better than expected. I think the biggest disappointment has got to be Pete, just because he's your first pick. He's been contributing in his own way. He's been tackle eligible every now and then. He had to go in for a few plays last night, I think. But he's still not he's not where you'd expect him to be for a first round pick, but I'd say, you know, I don't think we can really complain.
I think it's, Andrew, it's not 2006 level because they're not plugging and playing guys and they're not awesome. But I would say you can't ask for anything more than this. I mean, they got.
No, I mean, I think if the Saints from 2007 to 2013 had drafted like this.
Even half as good?
The team would be much better than it is right now. I can promise you that. So, but no, I think if you look at this class so far, and if you're evaluating through four games, you know, the first quarter of their first NFL season, how could you not be excited? How could you not see nothing but tons of promise? And really, the most encouraging part of it, you look at Bobby Richardson, who's basically taken over for Akeem Hicks now as an undrafted guy, and just played the best game of his career and was just awesome in this game. And then you look at Kikaha all over the field. His run support has been, in his sideline-to-sideline pursuit, has been so good. And then you watch him beat straight-up man-to-man Tyron Smith, one of the best left tackles in the NFL, for a sack. Stephon Anthony had one of his best games, played very well. The defensive line did a great job of setting him up, and he finished a lot of those run support plays, and he had a sack as well. Swan, up to this point, is a guy that I thought's been playing really well. Obviously, this was a bad game for him, but he's a rookie that's played well. And then Tyler Davidson gets his first sack. I thought he played well. So I just listed five guys, and they're all on the defensive side of the ball. And the main gripe that we've had with Sean Payton and with Mickey Loomis in this whole era is that they can't draft good defensive players. And I just named five rookies that are either starting or heavily contributing on that side of the ball and doing well. Oh, and by the way, your seventh-round pick already has a punt return for a touchdown. Looked very explosive again in this game.
He's got it. Whatever it is, he has it.
Absolutely, right. And he's setting the team up with field position. So, you know, even at the seventh round, you look at a guy that they were able to land that's helping the team. And, you know, with Pete, I was encouraged to see him play more. He came in those jumbo packages and had some really good blocks, helping Ingram get some holes and get some good runs there at the end of the game. And then, obviously he came in at left tackle for Armstead and held up pretty well. So
before Halloween,
I'm encouraged with Pete, too. I mean, I think this draft class so far, I mean, how could you not walk away as bad as this team's been?
Andrew.
The draft classes look good.
Andrew, before or after Halloween, Pete is starting?
I think it has to be before at this point. It has to.
In place of Streif?
Yes.
I mean, we're getting there. So, before we get to Twitter questions, which we have a ton, thanks everybody. Dave, I'll start with you. Did you? I know they won, but did you see anything Sunday night that makes you think they can get to 8 or 9 wins?
I've always thought they can get to 8 or 9 wins. My prediction at the beginning of the season was 8-8, and obviously they started off slow and they started off 0-3, and maybe we got a little bit more realistic. But I don't think 8-8 would be that difficult for this team to do. I think for the first four games, honestly, I think the defense has not really been so bad. I feel like it's the offense that hasn't really held up their end of the bargain in most of these games. We're used to offenses always under Sean Payton that are easily going to put up 30 points a game and that are easily going to be a top five offense. And, you know, they just have not been playing up to that level. So I think what does give me hope is, like I said earlier, the last three, four drives of the game Sunday night against the Cowboys, the offense looked great. They did what they needed to do. They led two game-winning two-minute drill type – well, not two-minute, the overtime. That's not a two-minute drill. But they led two scoring drives when they needed it most at the end of that game. And so I'm just kind of hoping that they're going to be able to build on that.
Andrew?
No.
No.
No. The answer to the question is no. I didn't see anything that made me think
Debbie Downer.
They can win.
You guys
predicted
that they were going to lose this game, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I said they were going to
win. I think I was the only one that predicted they were going to win.
Yeah. Listen, I the game was awesome. Taking nothing away from that, I think, you know, Breeze, I think you saw in this game that with an elite quarterback, even with an offensive line playing like they did, a running game struggling, you know, defense that gave up a critical touchdown late, I think Breeze came out and he showed why when you have an elite quarterback, you can win games. But let's not kid ourselves. You know, this was a Cowboys team without Tony Romo, without Dez Bryant. Their best player on defense, Sean Lee, gets concussed and he's out very early in the game.
Yeah, but he's like their Jarris Bird. He's always hurt.
Yeah, fair enough. But I'm just saying, I mean, imagine if the Saints in this game had been missing C.J. Spiller or Brandon Cooks and Drew Brees and, you know, Stephon Anthony or something like that. Yeah, I think the bottom line is this was a team that was quarterbacked by Brandon Whedon in New Orleans, in the Dome, and it took the Saints overtime to beat this squad. And so, you know, let's not kid ourselves. There's still a lot of issues with this team, and it was a great win. It was exciting. It was fun. But at the same time, now the soft schedule does give me some pause. I mean, if you look up and down that schedule, there's really no one that I say, yeah, the Saints can't beat this team.
Well,
I don't see that of
the
any
only
one team on the schedule.
The only team that they're going to play through November 15th where you are like, oh my God, that's a problem, is Atlanta.
Falcons.
Because Atlanta has everything you need to do to destroy the Saints. They have Vic Beasley to get after the quarterback, and they throw the ball like crazy, and they score points. Everybody else, the Eagles, we'll get to them in a bit. The Colts, they're terrible. I mean, they're terrible. And I know Luck didn't play, but their line is god-awful. The Giants are eh. The Titans, the Redskins, the Texans. I mean, they're going to be – the Jaguars at the end. I mean, they're going to be in these games. I mean, so hopefully they can get it together. We'll see.
I think 8 or 9 wins is asking
a lot.
A level of consistency that this team just doesn't have.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say 9 wins. I would say 8 wins. But I don't disagree with you, Andrew. But my point is, you know, obviously if they play the way they played Sunday night against some of these teams, yeah, they'll get whipped. But what I'm saying is I think they can use this game, and I think what we've seen is we've seen them progressively gotten better. Have they not? Have they not gotten a little bit better in each game?
I think
I think it's trending in the right direction. I'm hoping and all I'm trying to be optimistic about is that it only just continues to get better, and as we get later in the season, they're going to have way more of a fighting chance to win some of these games.
Yeah, and I think the talent is a little weak on the roster this year. And I just think that's, you know, the cap, obviously, and the bad drafts, and they're really young. But I think as Saints fans, you know, obviously we're starting to reshuffle our expectations and kind of decide what we want out of this team. I think if you keep seeing them play with this kind of effort, and, you know, Scott Fujita had a pretty meaningful tweet, I thought, you know, he sent something out there that's just like, hey, just want to let you guys know that I met a lot of these young players. And from a character standpoint, you know, character isn't overrated, and I see a lot of things that I like out of these guys.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought that was important to see that, because to me, and through 4 games, you see that these guys they fight hard, and they're going to be in these games, and they might not always win them, and they might, from a talent perspective, get beat. But I don't think this is a team that, you know, sometimes last year you just felt like they just rolled over and died.
Yeah, you just want – to me, I'm not so much worried about playoffs or winning season or anything. I just want, at the end of the year, all these questions that we had going into the year at receiver and offensive line and defensive tackle and linebacker and corner. If you go – you know, Andrew, we had, what, 5 or 6 questions going into the year. If you come out of the year and you only have 2 questions and you say, okay, Pete's started the last 6 weeks at tackle. He looks good. Calumet looks good at guard. The line looks pretty good. They need to go and get another guard. And you say, hey, Richardson looks good at tackle. They need to draft a couple defensive, more defensive tackles. Linebacker looks good. the corner. Look, you know, you just want more questions answered. You don't want to go to the end of the year and still have 3, 4, 5 questions hanging over this team. But
yeah, I agree.
Let's get to questions. First question is from Peachy Keen, Be More Who Dat. He asks, what is more likely, Hawker finishing out the year or Ralph learning to play Stairway to Heaven on the guitar? I gotta admit, man, the guitar is collecting dust. I'm reading baby books on how to feed infants and swaddle. I have not been as diligent with
the guitar. Don't read any of that crap. Okay. Don't worry about it. Just do it.
Ralph, I had no idea you could play like
no,
that.
No, I
man.
Can't. Andrew, this is a good question from Shane O'Neill. And you're such a. Could we be seeing a transition from offensive juggernaut to a defensive first Saints team?
I feel like they're somewhere in the middle. I'm still not sure where this team goes from here. I think it's transition, and I think a year from now, depending on the offseason and the draft. We could see them start to lean very heavily on the defensive side of the ball. For me, like, the young talent is more on that side right now than the offensive side. But, man, I mean, you plug one playmaker and one decent offensive lineman into this offense, and Breeze will be right back to where he's been.
Dave, this is from Sean Mars. I'm going to the Eagles-Saints game. How do I avoid the How do I avoid the batteries?
Don't wear a Saints jersey.
Yeah, you show no serious affiliation.
Well, here's the thing, Sean, and you know, you probably already got the tickets, so you can't be helped now. But my advice to any Saints fan when you go on the road to view the Saints, buy as the most expensive ticket you can afford, because. People in the nice section have careers and jobs and are lawyers and people like Dave with businesses and that sort of thing.
Classy.
And they don't give you crap. You might have to get crap going into the stadium and out of the stadium. But if you – that's the thing. When you plan a road trip for the Saints, spend as much as you possibly can on the ticket and skimp other places because you're better off. And I can say that with experience. Like me, I went with my wife. We went to see the Dolphins in 2009. We sat in the really nice seats. I went and saw the Saints play San Francisco in the dump Candlestick Park. But you spend in the nice seats, and the people are nice to you because they when you sit up in the rafters, the people can get drunk and crazy, and you just the
yeah,
best.
There's something about nosebleed where the people just have a lot less to lose.
Yeah, I mean that's and that might be racist or classist or whatever you want to call me, but I mean that's just how it is. Andrew, this is from our super fan Allie.
Wait, how much do tickets, nice tickets, and in San Francisco cost? I got to imagine that's got to be crazy.
Ooh, I think it was three. I think I bought three, and this was in 2007. It was three, and it was 50 yard line, sixth row. I think it was just under 500 for the three of them.
That was a while ago, though.
That's not too bad. I mean, it was. Yeah. They were nice, and that stadium is a dump. This is from Superfan Alley. By the way, everybody, you can donate $1 and you can rant. We'll have another rant hopefully next week. You win the lottery, you can rant, you can celebrate victories, you can yell at the Saints in defeat, you can make fun of other teams. That's totally fair. If you win the rant Atlanta week and you just want to bag on Matt Ryan and Atlanta fans for pumping in crowd noise, do it. All you have to do is donate $1 a month and become a patron and you can possibly rant. This is from Alley, Andrew. Were y'all at least mildly impressed by our D's ability to get in the backfield against the Dallas O-line? I was shocked.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were times where Whedon had way too much time, but I think they finished with 3 sacks. Now, one of them was a blitz where Vaccaro comes in, redirects Whedon, and then Anthony cleans up the play. So you get a sack by bringing extra pressure there. But I think the most impressive one was Davison getting a sack just on a bull rush, and Kikaha, like I said before, beating one of the best left tackles in the game. And he was just man up one-on-one and just blew past them. So I think when you look at those two plays, especially in isolation against that kind of offensive line, moving forward, you have to feel like this pass rush has a chance to get better.
Dave, I thought the Saints D was going to be less complicated this year. What gives?
It may be less complicated, but that doesn't mean that the players are going to be able to execute accordingly. But it does actually seem a little less complicated.
This is from Adam Fauché. Choose Saints get in the playoffs and have a 3% chance at the Super Bowl, or tank the season and have an 80% chance of a top 5 pick. Dude, Adam, I'm taking the playoffs every single time. For one thing, if the Saints go to the playoffs, you might have a playoff game like you had last night with Spiller, or a game to clench a playoff spot like last night. How awesome would last night have been if it was a playoff game, even if it was a road playoff game, or if it was a season finale to clinch a playoff spot? I mean, that's awesome. So I take the playoffs every time. The only way, Andrew, that I would pass up the Saints going to the playoffs is if you told me there was an 80% chance that they would get Andrew Luck in the draft and I would have another 15 years of elite quarterbacking.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'm on board with that.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's see. The Saints imitate the 2013 Panthers, who started 1-4 but ended up winning the NFC South. Saints in 2013 started 0-5. Dave, can this happen? That's from Katie.
Wait, read that question again.
The Saints imitate the 2013 Panthers, who started 1-4 but won the NFC South.
It's possible. It's definitely possible that the Saints are going to get better, but I think it's going to be tough for them to win the NFC South, just because, I mean, Atlanta's 4-0. We can't just ignore this and forget about it.
I mean, Carolina had the benefit last year of a trash heap of a division where everyone was struggling.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's definitely possible the Saints could go 8-8, but there's no way 8-8 is winning the division this year.
No, but but the NFC's pretty crummy. We'll get to that when we do the game picks. This is from Don Takana, is that how you say his name?
Yep,
Takana.
Yeah. Is the only difference between Brandon Browner and Jason David the fact that David has made interceptions with the Saints?
You know, I'm surprised we haven't brought up Browner until now because, man, he is just struggling. I mean, between the penalties, the lack of speed, getting killed vertically, you know, what point does Sean Payton make the decision, you know what? You're done. We're gonna go with guys that are you.
I haven't seen him play a lot before, I would love to talk to a Seattle person, a New England person who has watched the film on him the previous 2 years and watched film on him now. Is his knee in bad shape? Not that he was ever super known as a speed guy, Andrew, but is his knee bothering him? And you look at him, you're like, man, he wasn't fast to begin with, but now he's really slow. I mean, I just don't think
he should ever be playing on the outside without safety help. I mean, clearly he's shown that when he's on the outside with safety help, that he's going to get crushed. And there were plenty of times in this game where I thought he made nice plays. I mean, on that big run early in the game, he chases the guy down, he makes a tackle and saves a touchdown. He had a couple third down plays where he had pass breakups against Witten and another one. And then, you know, in run support, you know, he comes up to the line of scrimmage and he hits guys hard. And he had a couple big hits. And so I think what's lost maybe in this game a little bit is his physical play and some of the good plays he makes, because and let's be honest here, the bad plays far outweigh the positives.
This is a good – I missed this question from Wallace. Ralph, what's more frightening, a spoonful of wet cat food or Brandon Browner covering anybody? It's Wallace, and you know I hate the wet cat food. It's close right now, my friend. It's really close.
Well, I think the Saints just need to do a better job of putting Browner in a position to succeed, and that's not covering a fast receiver on the outside with no safety help. I think when you get him – In nickel packages where he's going up against the tight end, and I know he got beat for a first down one time by Witten, but those are the matchups really that he should be playing, you know. And I think if he's playing against Vincent Jackson or Witten or, you know, receivers like that, he's going to have a chance to succeed. If you put him against 10 Ginn, it's a death sentence.
Man, I'm watching Detroit right now. They're getting just destroyed, 13-3. And I look at them, and I look at these teams on the Saints' schedule, and it's not like I look at these teams and I'm like, man, the Saints are going to beat them. But I look at, like, Detroit, I'm like, that's a coin flip game.
Wait, the Seahawks kicked two field goals?
Yeah, they did.
Yes, that's
all right.
Good.
So Rick Face. I like that name, Rick Face.
How's Calvin Johnson doing?
Probably not too good since Detroit only has 3 points. Dave, this is from Rick Face. Are you more surprised that Snead is the Saints leading the team in receiving, or that he only has 240 yards?
That he only has 240 yards? That's not terrible through four games, especially considering how the Saints have been running their offense.
I think that's surprising that's good enough to lead the team is his point.
It's a little disappointing that it's good enough to lead the team.
That would mean Snead might get 1,000 yards receiving.
I mean, the Saints have been playing it behind in a lot of these games, and so, I mean, they haven't had the luxury of being able to, you know, run a lot in garbage time late in game to kill clock or that kind of stuff. So I'm not surprised that he's leading the team in rushing, and I'm not really surprised that he's only got 240 yards. I am definitely way more surprised that he leads the team in receptions. He's putting up, you know, again, from the very start, from the first game of the season, I said he seems to be playing more of a Pierre Thomas role, and I would say that the stats illustrate that.
I think based on the way the season's gone so far, I'm going to go ahead and say this now, and this isn't that crazy of a prediction. At the end of the season, the top two leaders on the team in receptions will be Ingram and Spiller, two running backs.
Ooh. Spiller will have to get busy then. But final question, then we'll get to the game preview. This is from Joe Valeni. I'd love to see Vaccaro rush the passer. Could he be Roman Harper type sacker from 2011?
I don't think Rob Ryan blitzes like Greg Williams did.
No.
You know, he's not as kamikaze of a defense. So I don't think that will ever happen. Honestly, that was a skill that Roman Harper was really special at. I mean, I think we take for granted how good he was at that. And as much as it was Greg Williams, I mean, that was something that Harper was just really, really good at. Vaccaro doesn't have the same skill set, I think, in terms of blitzing. But they did blitz him in that game, and he was primarily responsible for Anthony getting the cleanup sack. So I think we'll see it from time to time. But, yeah, don't expect him to get 7 sacks in this scheme.
How much drinking will you be doing during Astros-Yankees? I'll be doing all the drinking tomorrow during the playoff / play-in game.
So it's one game, right?
One game, baby. It's like football, man. It's one game. You win, and then you get to the playoffs. You get to play in the series where you best out of five. But
they're
tomorrow,
not going
to
beat the Yankees, are they?
Well, here's the
God,
thing.
I hope so.
Keuchel has pitched twice against the Yankees. And,
Keuchel? That's the guy's name?
Yeah,
that sounds like a Jewish slur.
It does, kind of. It does. But he's got a big, giant Grizzly Adams beard. But he's pitched against the Yankees twice.
Grizzly Adams did have a beard.
And he hasn't given up a run yet, so that's a positive. The negative is he's going on 3 days rest, and he's never done that in his career. So, but he's the Astros' best pitcher. You got to roll with the guy who might win the Cy Young. So we'll see. But it'll be a lot of drinking, and I am pumped to see my wife. She is a lunatic.
My wife.
She is a lunatic when the Astros play in a game on a Wednesday in July. I don't even know how she's going to be during this playoff game. She's been locked in intensity the last 2 weeks as they've been fighting their butt off to get in. But I just think it's going to be – I think it's going to probably be like – when I was with the Saints watching the Super Bowl. Like, she's going to be locked in tomorrow. So we'll see. It'll be fun. All right, let's get to Saints-Eagles. Andrew, the Eagles, they are a mess. And it's going to be interesting. This is a winnable game. This is another. I'm not saying the Saints. We'll get to my prediction in a second, but it's another game. It should be a toss-up game, should it not?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, you know, DeMarco Murray for me is just the guy that the Saints really have no answer for. And I think if he's playing well and the Eagles are smart, now they're not smart, and Chip Kelly doesn't run that offense the way he should, maybe. But if
their line's terrible.
Their line's terrible, but if DeMarco Murray's getting 25, 30 touches in this game, like he probably won't, but he should, and if he did, then the Eagles would win easily. But I still think this team, I mean, it's going to be hard for the Saints to go on the road and up north in Philadelphia and come away with a win. I don't know that they have the stones or just the quality to do that. But, you know, the way they played in Carolina was impressive, and they fought hard, so... I think it's going to take a pretty special performance by Drew Brees to pull it off.
Prediction?
Well, for me, I think the Saints are going to struggle. I think they'll play hard. I mean, that's what we've seen from this team so far, is they're gritty, and you know, I don't think Philadelphia is that good. So they'll be competitive, but I think Sam Bradford will just find holes in this defense, and I think the run defense won't be nearly as good as they were against Dallas. So I'll say Philadelphia 31, Saints 23.
Dave?
You picking them to lose again?
Yeah, he's picking them to
lose.
Yeah,
I am.
They're a 5-point favorite.
Who? The Eagles?
Eagles.
I guess I'm going to have
now
to be...
Now, that's a tough line. That's a tough line.
I'm going to have to be the optimist again, I guess, this week. Because I'm sure Ralph's going to pick against the Saints.
Yeah.
I think they're going to win. What the hell?
Wow.
You know, like you said, Ralph, I think they are a little bit of a mess.
Their guards are terrible. You think the Saints' guards are bad, and they kind of are. Philadelphia's guards are—they're awful. They can't. They showed a play the other day on NFL Films, that NFL matchup show. They ran a play, and their guards ran the wrong way. And the running back just got annihilated. But go ahead.
So I'm going to I'll say, like I said, I'm thinking maybe the offense is going to start picking it up a little bit. C.J. Spiller, maybe breathing a little new life. So I'm going to go with 31 points for the Saints.
Ooh.
And
no way.
I know, crazy. And I'll go with 27 for the Eagles. I think Darren Sproles is probably going to have a good game, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I can't decide if my player of the game is Malcolm Jenkins or Darren Sproles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, guys always play well against their old teams, especially the way it ended with Sproles. And, you know, I'm sure Sproles' wife is going to be there somewhere,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I was going to say, Clinton Harris has got to be good for 4 touchdowns, right?
Yeah, yelling and screaming. So I think Sproles is going to have a big game. But the player of the game for the Saints is going to be Hocker. He's going to rebound outdoors. It's going to be windy. And he's gonna nail a bunch of field goals.
You a pothead Hocker?
I'll tell you what, Hocker is out of the circle of trust after yesterday.
The Eagles are giving up 97 yards per game on the ground, and
not bad.
I'm gonna say this though. I'm gonna pick the Saints to win.
There you go, Ralph. Come
and
on.
Come
over to the dark
here's
side.
Here's the reason why. Chip Kelly. The Eagles fans loved him that first year. They were a little bit bumpy with him the second year. They are two bad Sam Bradford series from turning on that Eagles team. Like, and it doesn't even need to be an interception, like Andrew says, the Saints are due to get just by luck or something. They, because the Eagles, the thing is, they run that no huddle. So if they go 3 and out, like quick, they won't even have the ball hardly for like a minute between 2 drives. So they're 2 bad drives away from that crowd really turning on the Eagles. So that's one reason I think the Saints are going to... I think the Saints defense is going to push that offensive line for the Eagles around. That's my number one... That's my main reason as far as game, actual strategy and whatnot. But the main reason why the Saints are going to win is that I have to go to baptismal classes for my soon-to-be child at 2 o'clock. So
what's a baptismal class?
You got to, man, you're Catholic, man. You got to go to the classes. You got to No, everything, you know. It's,
I'm Catholic. I didn't go to any baptismal classes.
For your kids? Well, that's how they do it in Houston. Yeah. So I got to go to two of these classes. I got to go at two. So I'm telling you.
It's just like a one-time class,
no,
right?
No, I got to go this time. And
what
I gotta,
the hell?
And I got to go.
I did pre-Cana before we got
and
married.
I gotta, yeah, but... we did that too. And you got to go this time, Andrew, and I got to go another time, I think.
I didn't have to do anything.
And I
got to
go in November.
I met with a priest one time for like 15 minutes. I'm Catholic too. They don't make us do that craziness.
So I got to do that for two Saints. So like it's two of the Saints games. I'm going to miss like the third and fourth quarter. So this crazy stuff's going to happen, and the Saints are going to win 35-21. But it'll be 20. But it'll be 21-21 when I go into the class, and then the craziness will ensue, and they will win, and it's going to be fire Chip Kelly. He's not a genius. That's going to be all the rage next week.
Yeah,
on
speaking
ESPN.
Of scheduling conflicts, I have a coworker who invited me to her wedding, and they just announced the LSU Florida the kickoff time, which is a crushing blow because it will be right smack dab in the middle of the wedding.
Is 2:30 kickoff?
No, it's a 7:00 kickoff, and that's like when dinner starts. So it's like the worst possible time. Basically, like the entire reception is the game.
Here's the thing. Well, I mean,
so that's why God made smartphones.
Where are they? Are they in Louisiana, Andrew?
Yeah, but that's fine. It's Dave. It's not that I can't watch the game. It's not that I can't be up to date on what the score is. It's that I can't sit on my couch and enjoy watching the game with a beer. Instead, I have to small talk with a bunch of family members.
Andrew,
of
these people, are they from?
Even know.
Though, right?
Andrew, is it a Virginia wedding or is it a Louisiana family wedding?
It's a Virginia wedding.
See, Virginia's not really college football crazy. So they don't have the. I don't think people in Virginia have the whole thing of like.
Oh yeah, I don't think this girl's ever even heard of football.
Yeah, so like Louisiana people would never do that, and in the South in general, like they would know better. That's a tough one. It's a tough one.
And I have to go. And it's LSU Florida. I mean, it's going to be a huge game.
Yeah.
I'm disgusted. I'm absolutely disgusted.
Yeah. To how much sucks. Do you really like them or do you
I guess it's just more like I've already RSVP'd yes. And
now if you RSVP and you don't show up, they send you a bill for the meal.
That's right.
My wife, the wedding planner, is like,
My wife.
Right. So Andrew picked to lose, Dave picked to win, I picked to win. Kevin, who's on IR, designated to return.
Maybe never.
Maybe never, but he'll be back. He's trying to be the next Ric Flair.
I'm pretty sure he's picking the Saints to win.
Yeah.
He hates the Eagles.
I don't know if I want
him back.
He
does hate the Eagles. Are in his top, like Pittsburgh and the Eagles. He hates them. But yeah. I just think this is it's a winnable game for the Saints, and I think.
I think it's winnable.
I just don't think they're gonna win.
So for everybody, thanks for emailing everybody. We had the Twitter questions. They were fun, and you know, the Saints won, so be happy.
Don't worry.
So go to Saints Nation. Andrew's got his grades up.
Be happy.
And Dave's got Canal. Dave's got stuff on Canal Street Chronicles.
Be happy.
So for Dave, for Andrew, I'm Ralph. For MIA Kevin. Until next week, the bar is closed. Go Astros.
Don't worry, be happy.